Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm happy to have as my guest Jeff Stray, who's the author of Beyond 2012, Catastrophe or Awakening, A Complete Guide to the End of Time Predictions. Hello, Jeff. How are you today?
Hi. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yeah.
Where are you calling from?
I'm in Glastonbury in Somerset, UK.
Oh, great, great. Well, you're in the midst of the crop circles then, is that right?
Well, we're past the end of the season now, actually, but
okay. Okay. Well, I really enjoyed your book. I think it's a great synthesis of actually an incredible amount of knowledge that extends back as far as human history is recorded, and then, of course, extends forward with all sorts of predictions as to what actually is going to happen in 2012, and indeed if 2012 is the correct end date.
Yeah, thank you.
We've had the opportunity. I've been doing this radio show about 13 years. I've had the opportunity to interview many of the people that you reference in your book, not just on 2012, but on their works in spiritual science and consciousness research. So I'm real happy to see that you put this together. It's probably one of the, I think it is the best book I've seen on 2012. We've done a number of interviews with different authors, including John Major Jenkins in the past, and he wrote your foreword.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Can you give our listening audience a little bit of information about how you came to become interested in this topic and do the research?
Well, somebody recommended that I read Robert Anton Wilson's Illuminatus trilogy. That's where it began, really. And I read that, and it's very unusually written trilogy, and it was. By the time I got to the end of it, I really needed to go to the beginning and start again. But rather than do that, I decided to get hold of his explanatory book, The Cosmic Trigger, Final Secret of the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me quite a long time to get hold of it. But eventually I got a copy, and in there he did a review of, sort of a summary, several pages of summary of a book by Terence and Dennis McKenna called The Invisible Landscape.
Right.
That's where I first heard about 2012. Because Terence and his brother went down to the Ecuador rainforest. They were looking for a hallucinogenic snuff, actually, but they didn't find that. And they found the ayahuasca vine, and they smoked the bark of the vine and combined it with a mushroom and had an incredible 34-day experience.
Mm-hmm.
And with what they found out while they're in this altered state of consciousness. Well, Terence was informed that everything that happens in the universe is encoded into the ancient Chinese oracle, the I Ching, which is a group of 64 hexagrams. A hexagram is a six-line structure which is combined of yin and yang, a bit like positive and negative. So there are 384 lines in the whole sequence, which is 6 times 64, and he made quite a deep study of it when he got back to the States and hired a computer from a university and got a couple of mathematicians to help him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he extracted all the information from that King Wen sequence, converted it into numbers, and then converted the numbers into a graph, fractalized the graph where you have the same structure encapsulated within itself to smaller and smaller levels. Mm-hmm. And then he had a map of everything that happens in space-time, a map of novelty. And so the graph goes up towards habit and down towards novelty. And the only time it hits the baseline is at the beginning of the graph and the end of the graph, and that's a maximum novelty. And once he had the graph, he had to find out where we were on the graph, and he'd been told that we're somewhere near the end of the graph. They had to find a very novel event to correlate to a big spike near the end of the graph. And once he'd done that, he chose the Hiroshima explosion in 1945 and correlated that with a big spike, a novelty spike. And then it was 384 day years after that, because at 384 days he realized it correlates to the number of days in 13 lunar months, which is one lunar year. So he thought it must have been an ancient Chinese lunar calendar. And it happened that after this novelty spike, between that and the baseline hitting maximum, I mean the actual graph hitting the baseline, the maximum novelty, was 64 of these 384 day lunar years, and it turned out to be if you add that amount of days to the Hiroshima event, you get 17th of November 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's, he knew nothing about the Maya calendar when he made that calculation.
Yeah.
And nor did I when I read the book. And that was in the early 80s. I mean, he wrote the book, it was published in about 1975, the first edition. When he brought out the second edition in 1993, he'd heard about the Maya calendar at that point and incorporated that information into it. And meanwhile, I'd, in 1987, I then heard about the Maya calendar when I read Arg Wells's The Mayan Factor. So then realized that there's an ancient lunar calendar from one side of the world that's over 4,000 years old, and then there's a solar calendar from the other side of the world that's at least 2,100 years old, probably much older. And they both have this termination point within 34 days of each other in 2012. So that's what sparked off my my search for more information about this.
Well, we know that there's going to be a galactic alignment. I mean, that's astronomy, and that's set. Could you go into that a little bit? Around that time, there is a galactic alignment, and what that is?
Yeah, well, this is John Major Jenkins' work. He's read all the academic work that's been done, and what he's done is everything he said has been pieced together from different pieces of academic work. This is not some sort of flaky thing. This is pieced together from academic studies, but it's still, I mean, he is getting now, he's starting to get some support from the academics, but only some of the ones that are not too entrenched, of course. But eventually, I'm sure this will be accepted. But what he's found is that in the Mayan ball game and in their architecture and in their mythology and their king accession rites is encoded an astronomical alignment, which is the alignment of the winter solstice sun with the galactic equator. Now, it's very difficult for people to visualize three-dimensional astrophysics, planets and stars and things aligning. And people very often get that slightly wrong, and a lot of people are saying variations on it, like we are going through the center of the galaxy, or the solar system is crossing the galactic plane. That both of those are wrong, and as a result of that misunderstanding, some of the astrophysicists who've now been asked by the media, is this true, are saying no, it's not true, because they're basically They're not referring to what Jenkins actually said. They're referring to second-hand distortions of what he said.
Right.
So, yes, the winter solstice sun is crossing the galactic equator, and that's in the mythology, that correlates to the god One Hunapu, the solar deity, being reborn in the mouth of the jaguar toad, or sometimes a snake, or alligator, or even the birth canal of the cosmic mother. But in variations of the myth, yes, the god is reborn every few thousand years, where you have one of these 13 Bacton cycles comes to its completion of 13 Bactons and turns over and starts again. That's seen as a creation, a new creation. So rather than speaking in terms of destruction, they see it as a renewal.
Well, you know, with every turn of this new age, though, there is parts of creation that are destroyed in order to make way for those who are that are created. So it's both. I mean,
well, yes, and if you think that in fact this is a process which lasts 36 years, because the sun's half a degree wide, and it precession is about 72 years for 1 degree, so it takes that long for it to cross the galactic equator, then this is something that's already started.
Right, and we've seen
and,
a lot
so we've
of
already
destruction
seen Earth
of
changes.
Yeah, things that, and even within the economic fields, that things that are not working, things that are not real, are being exposed, and hopefully better economic systems will come out of after the energies come through and destroy what isn't good, what isn't real. So.
Yeah, it's what the Native Americans call purification.
Exactly, yeah.
The day of purification, true. Yeah. Before you can before you can have something new, you have to clear out the old, yeah.
That's true.
And so it's a big shake-up, yeah.
Paul, is it, you pronounce his name, LaViolette, is that right? Paul
LaViolette.
LaViolette, yes. I interviewed him I guess, a few years ago. And I was curious to see in your book, you referenced his theory that there's going to be does he call it a galactic explosion of energy about that time? Is that what, you want to explain what his theory is? Because it's kind of interesting, because that would,
yeah, exactly,
you know, that would explain some of the predictions.
Yeah, well, he's looked at ice cores from Antarctica and other places, and his theory is that every so often that the mist is being observed in other galaxies, there's a sort of, seems to be a sort of an explosion happens, and you get cosmic dust. You get get a whole load of gamma waves come out, and that's followed by a wave of cosmic dust. But the thing was, as to regards to fitting that to our current times,
mm-hmm.
I did email him about this, and he didn't think we were due for a major galactic explosion, but possibly a minor one. They do have minor ones at more frequent intervals.
Well, I wanted to mention first that Paul is an astrophysicist. I don't think we mentioned that. I wanted to mention was an article I was reading in the Atlanta Journal Constitution that said scientists have discovered, I think this was about 5 years ago, scientists have discovered a millionfold increase in the amount of cosmic rays coming in through the poles. And my brother is a scientist involved in the ozone, the ozone and sort of debate and whether, you know, what is causing the depletion of the ozone at the poles, which is interesting because,
yeah.
You know, the theory is that mankind, through their spray bottles and everything, or their spray cans and their pollution, are causing the depletion of the ozone. But it actually is being depleted at the poles, where there aren't very many people. And I suggested to him that maybe these cosmic rays were doing that. And I also suggested to some of my other authors that I interviewed that maybe the cosmic rays were actually entering the Earth and causing some of the increase in the frequency. We know that when, you know, if there is to be an ascension of the planet, that energy has to come into the system for a time before this occurs. You know, you can't just have it occur out of the blue. It's an energetic phenomena. So I wonder if we have not been having this happen for a while, and that the actual jump into higher dimensional frequencies doesn't occur, you know, after 2012. But it seems to me it would be, the cosmic rays would be coming in for a while.
Yeah, do you remember what I, in the book, or what I said about Dmitriev's work?
This is
the Russian geologist.
Yes.
He's found that the changes in the climate that we're having on the Earth are actually happening throughout every planet in the solar system.
Right.
They've had, the ice caps melting on Mars, mm-hmm. and a strange atmosphere developing on the Moon, and ion tubes developing on Jupiter, connecting the magnetic poles to the Moon Io, and the brightening of the poles, and
mm-hmm.
Uranus and Neptune have both had a shift of the magnetic field of around 50 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
These changes, he says, are happening throughout the solar system because there's a massive build-up of plasma on the edge of the heliosphere. And we've just had corroboration from NASA that they've found the same thing. But it's not in a huge... it's not all over the end of the heliosphere, according to NASA. It's in a sort of stripe across the end of the heliosphere. And either side of that stripe is where the Voyager spacecraft went. And there's some speculation that they may have known about that build-up of plasma and deliberately targeted those Voyagers to either side of it. But Demetrius says is that plasma is that's building up. It's about 1,000% over 10 years, 1,000% increase. It's bleeding into the solar system and going to the sun, making the sun flare up as it has sort of the trajectory of the sun's activity over the last few years, with the exception of the recent disappearance of the sunspot, has been increased activity. And he's saying that it's going to, you know, that's what's causing the Earth changes and that these planet-wide, these solar system changes and the solar changes, and that it'll also cause a geomagnetic reversal and what he calls a spontaneous mass evolution of mankind from this plasma.
Well, let's back up just a little bit. I want to explain to our listeners that theoretically sunspot activity, solar flare activity, has been associated with destabilization of the tectonic plates on Earth, so that what you get is the triad of earthquakes, tsunamis, and volcanoes. So it's been predicted that the time we're coming into, including the time we're currently in, there's going to be a massive increase in the number of earthquakes, volcanoes, and tsunamis. And that's part of the Earth changes and secondary to these solar flares. But I want you to talk a little bit more about the information or the evidence we have, some of Greg Braden's work maybe, on what the cyclical thing is on the magnetic pole shift, that it actually is a cyclical thing that can be looked back with geology, which is what, how Greg found it, him being a geologist.
I haven't found any other geologist that would agree with Greg Braden. That,
yeah, that's true. Greg's a friend of mine. I've known Greg for many years.
Well, he says that the Earth, when the magnetic poles reverse, that the Earth stops and starts turning in the opposite direction, and that's something I've yet to find anyone else to agree on.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he didn't really mention that in his latest book, The Fractal Time, but... What Demetrius said is that he thinks that, this is a process. The geomagnetic reversal is something that he thinks has already started, and that we are now in full process of it.
Right.
Because there are three in the laboratory. They've modelled it in the laboratory and found that there are three criteria that crop up, and we are experiencing those three criteria. One of which is a lessening. Which Greg did mention this, the lessening of the background magnetic field, which
right.
has been getting lower for the last 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is an increased speed of wandering of the magnetic poles.
Right.
And that is happening as well. And the third thing is outbreaks of opposite field. And we've got a big area off South Africa where that's happening. So this is a process that's already started. Now, most geologists would say they never actually all agree at all, but they basically say.
Nor do any group of scientists and academic circles.
Yeah, they basically think that this. Most of them think this is something that takes thousands of years to occur
right.
for a full reversal of the field. But there is actually an outcrop of rock called Steens Mountain outcrop, which shows how molten rock keeps the polarity of the retains the polarity of the Earth at the time the rock was molten. Well, they can tell by that particular outcropping that how long it took to lay down, and therefore they can work out how long it took for the. It was at a time when the Earth's magnetic field was moving quite fast,
mm-hmm.
and if you extrapolate that up to a 180 degree shift, it would only be a few months. It's much, much faster than they would normally expect. But, I mean, it doesn't mean, this may not be a full reversal. It may just be a partial, they even disagreed amongst themselves as to whether that was a full reversal or a partial excursion of the field, as they call it. In other words, it didn't make a full reversal. It just moved around a bit, but fairly fast. But I think that's quite important for consciousness because magnetic fields have been shown to influence consciousness quite radically. And,
yes, when the magnetic fields are closer to the zero point, people projecting the lottery are more likely to win it.
Right.
That was a study done. No, really, it's true. So, and there's a website you can go on the internet to find out, you know, where you are in terms of that magnetic thing. So, you know, when you play the lottery. But actually, there are some other things that may be influencing this. There is evidence that the pole shift is cyclical, and is there not evidence that there are things outside our solar system that are affecting the polar shifts? I mean, is there evidence of that? Like the Nibiru.
The Nibiru.
Passing close to our solar system.
Well, I've looked at that and haven't really found a great deal of evidence for it, because the whole Nibiru story is comes down to one man's interpretation of one cylinder cell, really. I mean, which is Zachariah Sitchin's interpretation of an Akkadian cylinder seal, which seems to show these the 12 so-called planets, which is the sun and the moon and 10 planets. Nobody really agrees with him actually on that. Nobody who can actually read the cuneiform script I know there was a guy called Christian O'Brien who wrote a book called Genius of the Few with his wife Joy O'Brien, and he's one of these people that can read cuneiform script, and he's actually studied the same text that Sitchin studied, but he did come to a lot of the same conclusions, which are still fairly controversial, and thousands of years ago an advanced humanoid species that had flying machines landed out on Mount Hermon, and that they sort of set up a kind of what then later became called the Garden of Eden, this community where they then did a sort of genetic engineering experiment and crossed their own DNA with that of the main anthropoid species that was around at the time, and created our ancestors, who then worshipped them as gods.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't say anything about Nibiru, this O'Brien. He basically concluded that these beings could have just been an advanced race that were already living on this planet, or they could have come from another planet, you know, or another moon. Didn't conclude where they came from, really, but and then there's Michael Heiser. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's got this website called SitchinIsWrong.com. Well, he's also someone that can read cuneiform script, and he's made quite wide critiques of Sitchin on that site. But I did write to him about O'Brien's work twice, and he hasn't replied. So I mean, I just wanted to get some feedback from him on that, but it could be that he's a little biased, that he didn't want to actually reply on that at all. So I don't know. But I say, it all does seem to boil down to Sitchin's interpretation of that one cylinder seal. And I didn't really find any solid information that Nibiru is about to return. But even Sitchin himself wasn't expecting it around now. It's a few hundred years, according to his calculation.
Or is there anything else that seems to be associated with the magnetic pole shifts? I mean, any other cyclical thing outside the planet? Like you said, the other planets in the solar system are experiencing shifts right now. Is there something?
Well, I think personally that it's this build-up of plasma that the whole solar system is going into an area of charged-up plasma, because
and that's cyclical, according to what we know. Is that right?
It is magnetically charged, and the fact is it would interact with our poles when it came near the Earth, because we have the northern lights. They are made of plasma, and when we have a solar storm, then we have a geomagnetic storm, and that happens via the northern lights, and that's when the northern lights come down to very low latitudes.
Right.
So, yes, I think that this plasma explanation is one of the best that fits all the facts that I've heard, and it also coincides with visions from near-death experiences, in particular Daniel Brinkley.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because what Brinkley said he saw when he had this 28-minute when his heart stopped in 1975, he then had about 100 visions of 100 major world events that mostly have come true now, including Chernobyl and the Gulf War and the Berlin Wall coming down.
Right.
And those visions culminated with, between 2011 and 2012, he said the Earth changes would culminate to their climax.
Mm-hmm.
And then between 2012 and 2014 would be a geomagnetic reversal. And he said this was caused by an energy that come into this part of the galaxy that hasn't been here for a long time, and it would give an evolutionary opportunity for mankind. And that's, on several counts, that's exactly the same as Dimitriev has said in scientific terms. This is what we have from Brinkley in visionary terms back from 1975.
So if you were to try to explain this to, I guess, someone who didn't really study metaphysics, what is this opportunity as relates to the planet and then as relates to the human race and even the animal kingdom? Because, you know, all the kingdoms are inhabiting the Earth right now. What do you think is a likely scenario?
Well, I think as it does seem to involve a magnetic effect,
mm-hmm.
so one possibility is that it could affect us via the magnetite in our pineal gland.
Right.
We've all got these crystals of magnetite in the pineal gland, and with some people, such as temporal lobe epileptics and schizophrenics, they are very, very sensitive to very small changes in the Earth's magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a very, you know, minor movement of the Earth field, that's when they will be triggered into having visions. Because a solar storm on the sun, you know, a lot of them will start having visions. But it could be with a more massive movement of the Earth field that effect will spread through more people that wouldn't normally be sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, I mean, it seems to me that you have heard of the work of Rick Strassman on DMT.
Right. You become aware of your multidimensional reality, where you were aware of it before, essentially.
Yes, I'm thinking that a movement of the Earth's magnetic field, a serious movement, could, via the magnetite in the pineal gland, cause your own pineal gland to secrete hallucinogenic molecules, such as dimethyltryptamine. There's at least 5 hallucinogenic molecules that we secrete into our own bloodstream from the pineal under certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that the trigger is this magnetic trigger, and that will cause people to have altered states of consciousness. And I mean, the first thing that happens when you have visions is that your repressed shadow material externalizes itself in visual form. So the preparation that you need to do for something like this is to confront your shadow material, because if we don't confront it beforehand, it will come up and confront us, you see, and then that will then distort any visions of the other realm that you have will be confused with your own internal material.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those people have already confronted the issues that we all internalize and bury away are those who have been more prepared for what it does seem to fit in with all the prophecies, where they talk about basically what seems to be an extension of our perceptions beyond the normal boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the Maori one, they say that the curtain will fall in 2012, but it turns out that it actually, the real translation is the veil will dissolve.
It's better that the veil will be lifted. That's true.
Yes, and it's the veil between life and death. Yeah. So our consciousness will be able to travel beyond its normal boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually agrees with
the... relegated to the third dimension. You know, the altered state of consciousness that people get in near-death experiences or in cosmic consciousness experiences, or sometimes with the use of certain drugs or mushroom extracts. basically, I mean, even will in the, be in available to everybody. And I think that the people who are fear-based will not be receptive to this at all. I think they'll be frightened by
it. Fear will cause a bit of a distortion to all this, I'm sure.
Right.
Even in the Maya prophecies from the Chilam Balams, it says that at the end of the cycle, the gods will come to visit his little ones, and after death will be the subject of his discourse.
Hmm.
And that suggests to me a mass near-death experience or something, which is a kind of a form of out-of-body experience.
Right.
So, I mean, the thing about people that have near-death experiences, and there are at least six I know who've come back talking about 2012,
mm-hmm.
They come back totally changed, as if they've been through a crash course in self-development.
Right, they have no fear of death, for one thing.
That's one of the major changes that you have straight away, yeah. They also, I mean, Brinkley, when he came back, he thought that people were talking to him, and then he realized they weren't, and he was actually hearing their thoughts. When they got into his aura, he could actually hear people. I mean, that's quite disconcerting for him for a while. But yes, a lot of people report increase in paranormal activity and abilities when they come back, but also an increased compassion for other people and less concern with material obsessions and that sort of thing, and just everything that you'd need, really, to bring about a golden age, because we can't really have a golden age while everybody's so
greedy,
obsessed by fear, greed, anger, and all the negative things which are stopping it from happening.
And that's the way I see it too. There are metaphysical sources of information that say that the Earth is really the only planet that hasn't ascended in our solar system, and that's why so much help is being given to her now, so that she can be birthed. And somewhere in your book, you talk about the birthing of the Earth. I don't know exactly where it is, but the idea that the Earth is going to be born into her state where she is supposed to reside, and that we're just kind of going along for the ride or so, but that we're, you know, we're with her, and she is born. I think the specific thing is that she's going to become a conscious being. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, the Hopi people actually speak of the end of each of their creation eras, of which we are in the fourth, approaching the fifth in their system. But, I mean, that's not the final one. There's seven in altogether.
Right.
They call each of these an emergence, and the emergence symbol is a labyrinth symbol, which is also called the mother and child symbol, and the whole thing is seen as a kind of rebirth experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they hold these ceremonies every year in November called Wu Jin in Akiva, in which they sort of do a replay of this rebirth, this emergence. So from a previous world into this world, then they're purifying themselves in preparation for the next emergence into the next world. And then they all come out of the Kiva up the ladder, which is called an umbilical cord, and they're naked and sweating, and they're washed like newborn babies, you see.
And Nikki Scully did a initiation ceremony to start this process. Is that the same thing?
In Egypt, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. That was around. Wasn't that around the millennium?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've forgotten when it was now, but yes.
It doesn't matter.
There was an interesting sort of combination of Orion in the sky rising on the horizon at the same time as, was it a solar eclipse or something?
Mm-hmm.
No, I've forgotten the details on that now.
Well, basically the point, I think, is that the ancient prophecies, Nikki Scully, who is a shaman priestess that we've interviewed several times on this show, was guided to do a ceremony to begin this process for the emergence of the Earth. I just want people to understand that the Earth may be a great conscious being with a much greater consciousness than the human consciousness, and that this event that is coming up may actually be more centered around the Earth's evolution than human evolution. It's almost like we're just coming along for the ride because we reside on the Earth.
Well, Peter Russell's work implies that we have a role to play in that birth of the Earth, and that we are actually, each of us is a sort of like a human neuron in a developing global brain.
Right.
Because the fact that there's 10 to the power of 10 molecules in a neuron and 10 to the power of 10 neurons in the neocortex of the human brain, and we're now past 10 to the 9, approaching 10 to the 10 humans on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So he thinks that this is a sort of critical number, and when you approach the critical number, that the individual units lose their individualness and start behaving as parts of a larger organism.
That's interesting. And then the information coming forth that we need 60,000 enlightened beings on the planet.
Isn't it? Yeah.
You want to explain that? That's interesting too.
Well, yeah. The myth of Shambhala, the hidden kingdom in the Himalayas, says that there is a series of kings. There are two dynasties of kings, and you add them all up, it comes to 32, and they each rule for 100 years from the time of Buddha until the coming of the Golden Age. And the final one is called Rudrakakrin, and the Hindus call him Kalki. And that when he comes, he will end the Age of Discord and kill off the barbarians and then inaugurate the Golden Age. Well, the people who are experts in decoding that mythology say that that killing off the barbarians is about people confronting their own shadow material. This is talking about what we've just been talking about, really, and everybody changing their psychology to prepare for, a functioning new kind of world, really. But that there is actually somebody in India at the moment, a guru, who Kalki Bhagavan is known as, and that his followers see him as this Kalki, the last incarnation of Vishnu, and that he does this this kind of energy transfer. The name of it's just slipped my mind for the moment. It's a sort of laying on of hands kind of thing, and then he's trained up a lot of people to do this as well, and they go around doing it. And once he's got 60,000 people who've been enlightened by this method, Diksha it's called, that's it, I remember the name now.
What is the name again?
It's called Diksha.
Diksha, yeah. I've received Diksha.
You have?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
And, yes, when enough, as you say, when 60,000 people have got it, he says that will cause a kind of critical mass, so that then, yeah, we have the number of people to cause a spreading of this onto the sort of species mind.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like the 100th monkey effect for our listeners who
that's similar. Yeah,
don't
very
know
similar,
about that theory. But
Rupert Sheldrake's theories sort of cover that, formative causation theory and morphogenetic resonance. Yeah.
Well, what I sort of see is an energy shift, and by energy I might not mean electromagnetic energy so much as a spiritual energy shift on the planet, although we might see the plasma waves and changes in the electromagnetic fields and actually probably more so the electromagnetic fields calming down, going towards zero, like Greg Braden has pointed out. But in any case, what I see is that more people will become aware of their multidimensional nature and be able to communicate with their higher aspects of their higher self on an ongoing basis. When you can communicate with your higher self all the time, number one, you don't have loneliness, you don't have depression, you don't have, a lot of the negative things. You really don't get sad because there's nothing to be sad about because you are bringing this energy in, your soul energy all the time. And so you're actually very healthy, emotionally and mentally, and eventually you'll be healthy physically as well, I believe. And Alice Bailey, in her works, Master DK, said that disease is the result of inhibited soul life, And what that means to me is that energy coming in from your soul is, or your higher self, is able to make you completely healthy, happy, and financially secure. And I mean, if you're always taking guidance from this source, which is connected to all that is, you can't help but be better off rather than being in the dark, having the veil down. So the only way I can see for us to get to 1,000 years of peace, as the Bible predicts and other, you know, other religious texts have predicted, is that we all shift into this higher awareness and quit hurting each other, you know, financially.
It does seem
or
to be what all
the
prophecies from everywhere seem to be agreeing on.
And I don't know that it's going to be sudden. You know, I've interviewed a lot of people, and I ask them, do you think this is going to be sudden, you know, like in the twinkling of an eye, or do you think it's going to be gradual? What's your opinion?
Good question.
Now,
well, I think the main event, I see the main event as something that's already started, because we're already noticing an increase in earth changes. We're noticing an acceleration of things, and everything does seem to be speeding up towards something. But because a lot of the people who've come back from altered states of consciousness in their visions, I mentioned the year 2012 specifically. I think that is the sort of focus point of this thing, if you like. But I don't see it as all culminating on one day. That would be very surprising to me. But I do sort of see 2012 as the main focus year, although not expecting everything to happen then, but just the a major changes.
And
they may not be clear until we look back on it afterwards.
Yeah, it's the end of a 26,000-year cycle, which your book has done a very good job of pointing out all of the different sources. You know, some are astrological, some are historical. There is basically a 26,000-year cycle with each age. You know, we're ending the age of Pisces and entering the age of Aquarius. So that was And Aquarius is more mental, less emotional. You know, more ideas into more. I believe a lot of our problems will be solved because we put mind power to it. You know, we actually think our way out of it. rather than have the vast emotional outbursts that we've had in in the previous 26,000 years.
Yeah, the Jenkins has shown that the Maya were measuring precession, but not via the equinox, as we measure it from the equinox. They're measuring it from the winter solstice.
Right.
And I said he's now very recently got some support from two epigraphers, which are probably qualified Maya scholars, because they write letters after their name. So, I mean, it's controversial amongst the academic world at the moment, but I think they probably won't accept it until after 2012, because I'm involved in a lot of discussions they don't want to be involved in.
Well, it's considered fringe and lunatic and everything, you know, all the labels. But you know, I'm not interested in the politics of it. I'm a double Sag, so I'm only interested in the facts, spiritual science. You know, I think
it's all getting twisted by this film that's coming out next month, really, because that's total and utter catastrophe.
That,
of course, there's a lot of viral websites and promotion that go along with that, and then, of course, the media are then just asking
why it's important people read your book, because it's a much more balanced view and historically and scientifically based, not just fear-based.
I must agree.
But, you know, I mean, there could be some people who are extremely fear-based that experience the times up through 2012 is very negative. I mean, certain people's experience could match that prediction.
A NASA consultant who was on the net just recently saying he'd had all these emails from teenagers that were talking about killing themselves before the end of the world comes.
Well, you know, I mean, if that becomes your reality, then you could act on that. But, you know, that's we would hope that they would pick up your book before they actually,
Well, that's right. I'm kind of anticipating all this, really, and I've been on the case trying to defuse the misinformation about it.
Do you have a website that you'd like to give?
Yes, it's diagnosis2012.co.uk.
Okay. Can you repeat that one more time?
Yes. That's diagnosis, D-I-A-G-N-O-S-I-S, 2012.co.uk. That's diagnosis2012.co.uk.
Okay. Jeff Stray's book is Beyond 2012, Catastrophe or Awakening, A Complete Guide to the End of Time Predictions. I particularly enjoyed it because it brought together so many of the different, bodies of knowledge that I've been studying, anywhere from astronomy to astrology to the ancient prophecies to the information about remote viewing. We've interviewed Russell Targ on many occasions and Joseph McMonagle, to the information that Greg Braden's been bringing out, and Nikki Scully, and of course Daniel Brinkley, who I interviewed just recently, all of his predictions, this is what I like to do. I like to correlate back and forth to see what matches. I mean, the psychic information should not be discarded, especially if it's been accurate. Anywhere from Nostradamus to, well, we do know that ancient prophecies may not be as accurate as more recent prophecies. You know, it's almost like...
Well, no, I mean, they didn't even have the vocabulary to express what they were seeing in the visions, did they?
Let me tell you a short story. I dated a military fighter pilot for about 18 years, and he studied Nostradamus very, very carefully, and he came to me and he said, guess what? They just changed our gas mask so that we look like pigs. And Nostradamus said he saw flying pigs. So I thought that was a gem. Nostradamus, being, you know, a physician in, what, the 1500s, didn't know what a fighter pilot was, you know, or plane. He just knew that it looked like a flying pig. So that's an example of that. That was kind of cute. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. I really enjoyed
pleasure,
it.
Yeah.
And do you have a book that you're doing next?
I've got a little, there is a little one that's just come out called 2012 in Your Pocket, which is a sort of mini version of the
Okay. And they can get that on your website, that information on your website?
Okay. I've also done one called The Mayan and Other Ancient Calendars, which is just about calendars. Particularly the Maya calendar, and shows why it was so, you know, different from all the other calendars,
right,
more interesting and amazing.
That's true. Well, thank you very much. We've been speaking with Jeff Stray, a great book, Beyond 2012, Catastrophe or Awakening, one of the best books, actually the most complete book I've read to date, and I would highly recommend anybody interested in what's going to happen between now and 2012 to get this book. Next week, Dr. Clofine's going to interview me about my new book coming out, The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, From Harm to Healing. And on the 14th, we're going to be interviewing Anne Maria Hemingway, Practicing Consciousness, Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. Then Dr. Larry Dossey on the 21st, The Power of Premonitions, How Knowing the Future Can Shape Our Lives. That would be particularly important as we approach 2012. And on the 28th of November, we're interviewing Penny Pierce, her book, Frequency, The Power of Personal Vibration. We also have the Noetic Science meeting every third Thursday of the month. This month, we are presenting Mark Hanlon and Lawrence Paley, who will be talking about the Heart Project and how these electromagnetic frequencies can affect your health. Again, Jeff, thanks very much for calling to us from England. We appreciate that. This is Dr. Kolb, Temple of Health. Join us next week.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute. You look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plasticos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone, skin, and contour the body. Endermology by Plasticos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plasticos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plasticos at 770-457-4677. Plasticos, Endermology, Skin Toning, and Body Contouring. 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally. You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plasticos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plasticos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plasticos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plasticos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plasticos?
Plasticos is in Dunwoody. Plasticos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plasticos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.